Wisconsin just locked down the state. Top recruits staying home. Big names committing in bunches. This 2027 class is starting to feel different. And meanwhile, guard added a point guard. Is he the starter? Is he good enough to be the starter? I'm Rajiv. He's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers, ring one up.
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers on today's show. This wasn't random. This was targeted, in-state foundational pieces all coming together at once. And it raises a bigger question about where this program is heading under Luke Fickell. Are we finally seeing Wisconsin take control of its identity again? Or is there still a gap between recruiting momentum and what we see on Saturdays? So we're going to break it all down, the names, the fits, the film, and really dig into what Wisconsin is building with this class. Then we flip to basketball, where the Badgers add an experienced international guard in Owen Foxwell. Not a portal patch, but a different kind of move. We review his film, talk about what we like, our concerns, and answer the big question, is this the new starting point guard, or will guard find yet another piece in the portal? You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. It's very, very helpful to the algorithm of the show. Leave your comments. Those of you who listen to this later, leave your comments in later. We'd love to kind of get your feedback on the show, anything that you think about what's going on. Lots to talk about, Justin. If you are into recruiting, this is a show for you. We're going to talk Badger football recruiting. We're going to talk a little basketball recruiting. Justin, how you doing, man? Happy Easter, by the way.
I'm doing good. I got to spend some time with the parents and my brother and his girlfriend and daughter. So got to chill out with the little munchkin and watch her crush some Easter dinner, I guess you'd say. early dinner. Just fun. I like saying that she's 2 years old, so being able to see her run around a little bit and cause a ruckus was kind of fun. I had him this weekend, so he got to stop over too. So it's a good time.
Nice. Yep, I have my first Easter with two kids, so that was it's been interesting, fun. Obviously, I'm still in full new daddy mode here, which is why you haven't seen me on Locked On. Justin's been going on there quite a bit lately. I'll be back on there soon, but for now, just once a week. It's going to be a lot
rest,
of stuff.
That's right. You got plenty going on.
That's right. But I am watching on YouTube. If you are watching on YouTube, I am wearing my new Wisconsin hockey jersey, which I hopefully will be wearing on Saturday if the Badgers make it to the national title game, because Thursday I will be in Seattle. I will not be here in Vegas, sadly. But if they make it to the championship game on Saturday, I will be there as close as I can get to the ice, as close as my pocketbook can allow me to pay. And I will get there and I will be wearing this. So hopefully we can see the Badgers win a national title on Saturday. So we're going to show film today. We're going to talk through Kingston Allen. We're going to talk through the Malinger twins. We're going to talk through Owen Foxwell. A lot of questions about that. A lot of discussions about Foxwell as a point guard. So we're going to show his film as well. So a lot of good stuff. If you're listening to this on a podcast, no worries at all. Obviously, you're not going to see the film. But we'll talk through a lot of the things that we like and dislike about them. So it doesn't really matter if you're not watching the film. But if you're watching on YouTube, you will get to see some of that. Before we do anything else, Justin, though, Michigan, UConn, national title game. Obviously, I know everyone was watching the Final Four. Maybe you're someone who doesn't want to watch the Final Four because we're not in it. And I respect that. But boy, Michigan opened a can of whoop ass on Arizona, but they lost Laxell. Yes. Lindenberg, kind of, he's still going to play, but he's not fully full strength. How do you feel about this, national title game tomorrow?
I think that here's how I felt. Like I was talking to Ryan a little bit, and both of you guys, actually, you had stuff going on. My takeaway from this game was you cannot be a one-punch fighter playing Michigan. And that's what Arizona was. Like, they were not capable of being a team that was going to have to, like, when they took away the paint, they were not a team that could hurt Michigan from the outside. And that was a problem. If you watch the games, like when Wisconsin beat Michigan, it was because we absolutely torched them from three. They packed in the paint. We scored a little bit in the paint, but really where we hurt them was we went off from 3-point range and won that game because we shot so well. That is not something that Arizona's comfortable doing. It's completely against what they had been doing all season, which is mostly being able to get in the paint at will and just beat teams up scoring inside. I think this game against UConn, they will win comfortably. I think they're locked in right now. I don't think that UConn is as athletic as what Arizona was. I do think they can shoot it better from the outside, but I question whether they're going to be able to beat up Michigan on the inside because they don't have a ton of size. They have Reed, who's a very quality big man, but besides him, I don't know if they can go in there and really expect to score well against Michigan. And I think that just leads to Michigan blitzing them on the 3-point line.
I think Michigan should beat them comfortably, as you say. I don't know that they will, just because UConn is UConn and Danny Hurley is just Danny Hurley. Like, the dude has an incredible record in this round of the tournament. Like, all he does is win, honestly. And like, the thing is, that does matter. That does count. Like, his ability to get games won in this tournament. I mean, I'm not betting against UConn. I do think Michigan wins. I do not think they cover. I think it's going to be a close game. Wouldn't surprise me if they cover. It's 7. The spread's 7. I think Michigan could win by 15. You could be right. It could be a blowout. Even Zach Bartz, I think, even said that it's a blowout. He says he got Michigan 82-69. So a 13-point win.
I wouldn't have 7. Like, I don't think the spread should be that high. That feels a little prisoner of the moment to me based off of Michigan just pounding Arizona. It could happen. If I was placing a spread on this, excuse me, I would probably go 4.5 or 5. Just because I don't like so much weird stuff happens. And with that guy going down, he really watching him, how limited he was on the court. If it was me, I would be very limited. Like, I would let him play a little bit here and there, but it would be more, he'd be coming off the bench. And I would probably be looking for soft spots kind of in the game where I think I can get away with him out there and he can't, because Hurley is going to search him out offensively.
Look, Michigan, in my opinion, and I've said this all year, you've heard me say this if you listen to this show, Michigan's the best team in the country. They've been the best team in the country the entire freaking season. It's not close. Yes, we got them. It is maddening, by the way, that Illinois and Michigan are both in the Final Four. We're like, hey, we can beat them, but we can't beat High Point. But that's show for another day. Kevin Brown's still seething about this. He can't even watch basketball.
I don't know that we would beat this version of Michigan. Like, if Michigan's fully engaged.
We played this version of Michigan. We did. They were undefeated when we played them.
We played them during a regular season game, which I'm not belittling what we did. We beat an extremely good team. But this is like anything else. Like, when we watch football during the regular season, Ohio State looks like Ohio State. And then there's playoff Ohio State where it seems like everything gets cranked up to 11 and they're like, every player is locked in 100%.
And that's UConn, by the way. That's what UConn's going to do tomorrow. Like, you don't, Final Four UConn is what you're describing about like playoff Ohio State.
Who do you look at and say that this guy's going to be a problem for Michigan?
Michigan lost to us. They almost lost to us again. They lost to Purdue. They lost to Duke. Like, Michigan has some soft spots. And honestly, Dan Hurley is the reason that I look at UConn and think, oh, gee, like, they get this done. Reed could be unstoppable. Caravan and Mullins, like, they those guys can shoot. Ball had a great game yesterday. Like, they've just got players on that team.
I won't argue that, but I think that Michigan is the best defensive team that they've played. That matters, because Illinois is a good team. Their issues during the season were the fact that they struggled defensively at times and just tried to outscore people.
You're right, and here's where I think you make a good point, because Duke is actually probably a better defensive team than Michigan. And Duke technically really should have beat them. Like, they gave up a 19-point lead like a bunch of idiots, and then, of course, that ridiculous pass that should have eliminated UConn didn't. Anyway. It's going to be a good game. I'm excited to, I'm going to be at volleyball during it anyway, so I'll watch it, which is fine with me. But I did, we'll see what happens. All right. Before we get into film, I want to just, Justin, like, talk bigger picture stuff about Fickell's in-state recruiting. Big week, big week. Got the Malinger twins, got Kingston Allen, a lot of excitement. I know you did a couple of shows with Ryan on this. But overall big picture, like, I mean, you got to be pretty impressed with what's happening here. I don't think this is entirely unexpected that we are going to get these guys in state, but this is sort of what we've been wanting from him on the recruiting front. We've been pretty happy with him on the recruiting front. This is the one thing that was missing, getting those in-state guys. He's getting them.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk, especially on the Discord, regarding this in terms of, like, what's changed. I don't know that there's been a massive change other than that this is a super strong class in that you have kids that are more open to Wisconsin. Now, I do think the staff probably has really made a concerted effort to get on it earlier, but some of the players that they've missed on were guys who were, you had legacy Notre Dame commits, you had guys who were going to Ohio State type situations. It's not like you were losing out to, like, somebody's going to Iowa, or, like, you had Gavin Meyer. Like, that's the one that I look at that I was kind of pissed off about, where I'm like, and I'm honestly more angry at the fact that you listen to a guy who's perpetually a 7-5 coach and you act like he's some type of gold standard compared to what Fickell's done. It's like, whatever. Like, you can, if that's the moron you're going to listen to, so be it. I think he's a pretty, I do not like PJ Fleck. You know this. I think
neither of us do.
I think he's a pretty sketchy human being. I just don't like people who are
sketchy human being.
I would use a lot more colorful language if I was not on the podcast right now. But I just think that he's manipulative. And I think all coaches to a degree are, because you're a salesman. But just the way that he goes about things, I'm not a huge fan of. What I will say is, I think you can, like, you have to go almost case by case. If we're going to break it down, looking at the guys who we missed on, you'd have to look at them and say, what were the extenuating circumstances as to why this Wisconsin missed on this player? They've done a great job this cycle locking down the guys who they, in my opinion, fit the program, and that were guys that they had an above average chance at. They have not missed. The only one that they've missed on was Flanagan, another legacy. The writing was kind of on the wall that one, if Notre Dame wanted him, they were going to get him. Otherwise, he's probably here. So kind of look at it from that standpoint and say they've done a great job getting what they can. I do think that what this does for Wisconsin is you have a base of very devoted players now coming in that want to see the in-state school win again, and that are probably going to be really good recruiters for this cycle for us, which is harder to do when you have guys that aren't as invested in the team when they're coming from. Like, they're still invested, obviously, because they want to play for Wisconsin, but they don't understand what it is to be a Badger in comparison. It's not like something that they grew up watching their whole life.
So you asked a really good question there, like, kind of like, what in the discussion on the Discord is like, what changed? I think my answer to that is there are things that change that are outside of, that are not because of Luke Fickell, and there are things that are because of Luke Fickell. And I think both can be true. The first is that the class is just there. You've got more 4-stars this year, typical offensive linemen that we would go after. Excuse me. Yes, we whiffed on Ryan Sexton back in the day and some other guys we missed on. But at the end of the day, we just have a better in-state class. Like, that's part of it, right? That's not in Fickell's control. We had a better class that, of course, inherently Wisconsin is going to be in the driver's seat and should be in the driver's seat of anybody in-state, especially guys that are like prototypical Badgers, like these offensive linemen and like the Malinger guys, for example, Reader, things like that. The other thing is that Luke Fickell has made a concerted effort to bring Wisconsin culture back to Wisconsin. And that, to me, is the one thing that matters the most here. Appointing Brady Ewing as a alumni coordinator, right? Realizing that over the first 3 years of his tenure, he is, for whatever reason, maybe not to his detriment, not to his, potentially his fault, but like alienated some old Badgers, alienated Badger alumni. The culture around the program was sort of dying, and I think they made an effort to say, okay, well, we need to fix that. We need to refocus on in-state recruiting. We need to refocus on our alumni, building our culture, similar to the way that Greg Gard has done that for years. Obviously, his entire bench is full of ex-Badgers. It's about that whole Badger community, and I think that's the big thing that changed. that along with the fact that we just have more guys in state that are awesome and that we want here. And yes, we were able to get them, but he does deserve a ton of credit for landing them. And I think that's all part of the culture shift, because he came in here trying to say, okay, we're going to probably do some changes. And then like, okay, none of that really worked. We need to go back to what we need to bring, start here, start, get, build that floor. As we've been saying, build that Wisconsin floor, then find those, those areas that you can exploit and you can grow better at to raise our ceiling to what Luke Fickell was brought here to do, which is raise our ceiling. However, he's got to fix the floor first. And I think he's doing that. I think he's doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We have, I love Bo Dragon, I love you, but the reason why he didn't do this in year one is there weren't eight guys that were in Wisconsin that were worth getting.
Right.
So you have to look at, like, even last year, they didn't hit on a lot of guys. How many did they miss on that they offered last year? You had Gavin Meyer and you had Flanagan. And I think there might be one or two more in there. But it's like, at some point you have to look at it and say, are we missing on guys that we're going after? And that's where you have to kind of take a look at it. I think there are Wisconsin kids that maybe you can take a look at late in the cycle. And I think we still may have two guys yet this year that if they have really good senior film, have a chance to elevate themselves to offer worthy. But we need to stop acting like Wisconsin's a loaded state of high-end, high three-star prospects, because it's really not. And you can look at that and say, also, just because a kid's a high three-star, does he fit what we actually want to use him for? There are players that are definitely quality players that doesn't necessarily mean they fit what we want to do with them. So just bringing in a kid because he's a Wisconsin kid makes zero sense if he's just going to sit there and basically just be a towel, waver on the sidelines. Like that's useless.
And Bo Dragon responds with, I'm talking about culture. And I agree with you, Bo. And I think the answer to this is he made a mistake. The answer is he was wrong. Like I think it's very, to me, as any of all of you listening to this diehard fans, like, I think he kind of effed this up. I think he realized that like he needs to bring that culture back, and he can't go and like, you can't stray too far away, because when you stray too far from culture, you take a risk, especially a program that has been built on such a good foundation that Barry Alvarez built. That is what drops the floor. If you lose culture, the floor drops. You can raise the ceiling and not do that. And that is what I think he whiffed on. So to me, this is just the fact that, look, he hasn't been a good coach for 3 years. He hasn't done it for 3 years. He made a mistake. And I think, as I said, and the rock bottom to me is behind us, man. Justin, I really feel like rock bottom is behind us now. Those wins at the end of last season, I think, helped with that. Now you couple that with better culture, the in-state recruiting again, NIL funding clearly going up. All that together to me shows that we're on the upswing, and I think he gets it now, like where he needs to take us.
So with regards to culture, what I'll say on that is this. If you win, nobody really cares how you do it. What I will say is if you fail, I think Wisconsin, it's as a state in general, is on the more conservative side in terms of how they tend to be like conservative when it comes to change. So they tend to want to revert back to whatever they've experienced success with in the past if something doesn't go the way they expect it to right off the get-go. So really the only way that this was going to work is if he hit the ground running and got things right from the get-go. There was a question in the Discord, or I mean, in the chat here, somebody said, do we want to get back to being run heavy? And I don't. I want us to be balanced. If we run for 250 yards one game, fine. I want to also see games where we go out there and we throw for 250 yards and we carve teams up through the air. I think we just can't afford to be limited. Like if you really want to get to where you want to be as a team, you can't be, much like I brought up with Arizona in basketball, you can't be one-handed. You've got to have the ability to attack in multiple ways, or you're going to set a limitation on the team.
Yeah, I agree with you, man, but like, we don't have to be like as run heavy, but we have to be able to do it as well as we did.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Like, I miss the days where people are like, oh yeah, Wisconsin, boy, they can run the ball over us. And you got to stop Wisconsin's running game. I want that back. I want to be feared as a running team, which is probably why a guy like Kingston Allen is coming here, and the Malinger twins for that matter, which to me is a good sign. Like you're right. We have to have that element. We need to be better at passing the ball. And I think we will be. Like, down the line with Fickell and with Grimes, and if that works. But we have to be able to all run the ball like we have. When we can't run the ball like Wisconsin, we look pedestrian out there.
Look, I have a question on this, because this is philosophically speaking. I don't know. Are the days of old Wisconsin running football still possible in the transfer portal era? And the reason I ask that is because, do you hold on to your line depth for 3 years if guys aren't getting on the field? And I think that that's a question that, like, because we've talked about, you have to kind of let the offensive linemen kind of percolate their way up until they're ready to play. And I'm not sure you get that opportunity to kind of get the conveyor belt going and just keep those guys in there. There's going to be guys that have talent that end up leaving after 2 years if they're not, you know, at least getting out on the field, which I think is going to dim that to a bit. Now, it doesn't mean you can't run the ball at a high level. And I think Indiana kind of proved that last year, even with more limited players. Like, I don't think they had a running back that you'd look at that in Wisconsin's heyday that would have seen the field. And they had two pretty darn good guys, but there was nobody that was a Monte Ball or, you know, Gordon or Taylor level talent that was on Indiana last year. They're really,
I think,
good.
The game has evolved to where we're not going to see that kind of that traditional running attack. And you're right about that. I think it's still possible, but I think if you're going to be at Wisconsin, you're going to make this program successful. It's about the offensive line first and foremost. Absolutely. Which obviously, you know, lesson learned, right? So if that gets fixed, then we will have the ability to run the ball like we have in the past, theoretically. And from the running back talent perspective, we have that, right? And we had that in, you know, Jones and Dupree. Obviously, we've lost Jones now. Abu Sama, Kingston Allen, like the stable of running backs looks strong. It's just about whether or not we can get this line functioning the way that it has been in the past, and then, you know, we'll go from there. But let's take a look at some film. We're gonna watch. So we got some big recruits this week. Obviously, number one, we're gonna talk about Kingston Allen. So here's what we're gonna do: we're gonna pop the film up, and then we're gonna talk through a little bit about these guys while the film is happening. So let me just share my Kingston Allen screen here, and we're going to play this. Okay. So Justin, 6'4" composite 4-star, 6 foot, 195-pound running back out of Green Bay. What are some of your initial thoughts on Kingston Allen?
He's very decisive. He's got really good burst. I'm curious to see. It says on his huddle, excuse me, that he's a 4-5 guy. Oh, man. I don't know what's going on with this cough. I just can't kick it.
I feel like I'm the same way. I didn't even bring my water up here. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm dying without my water.
I really like the way with how decisive he is. He's not super elusive. He does have good vision, but he's not a guy who's super shifty. And this is one of the things I brought up with Ryan. Some of the comps, I said he runs like Sean Alexander. And I say that because he runs very upright. He's not a guy who gets really low and presses the line and kind of hides. He's just kind of up. There was the running back that was on Boise State that kind of ran that way too when they beat Oklahoma. And it doesn't mean he can't be successful. It's just also something that you probably want to get a coach a little bit of that out of him and have him get a little bit lower, because he's going to struggle probably at the college level with being able to push. Like, I think he's physical, but I do question with how upright he is, how often he's going to be able to push the pile. I do love how decisive he is. I wish we could see more on his film of him having to freelance and go when things are busted. And he's like, I need to figure something out here. Cause his team is pretty darn good at blocking up the run.
For sure.
And there's a lot of him just getting free and not getting touched. And because of that, it's hard for me to look at this and say how this translates at the college level, where he's going to have to run into much tighter spaces.
So my initial thought is, and I'm not trying to sound like someone who's not excited, because I think it's a really good pickup for us. I think he's a really talented guy. First of all, do you know, like, we're an estimate on his 40 time? What do you think his 40 time is?
He said 4.5 is what's listed on the model.
So, like, he's a fast guy, obviously. Like, you can see it on huddle, and like there's speed there. My biggest thing is, and I agree with a lot of what you said there. I just feel like he does make some quick moves in the hole, but the team blocked very well for him. he hasn't really had to fight through any kind of like adversity running the ball, at least on film. You're not seeing him fight through a lot of tackles. You're not seeing him break them. You're seeing him go up against clearly inferior opponents. And I just don't know how, like, you know, one of the things I look for is vision, right? And, and so for me, when you watch a guy like, obviously back in the days of Jonathan Taylor, even with a guy like Dylan Jones, the vision was there on film. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't have it. He hasn't had to show it yet. Yeah. So that's my thing on Kingston Allen. Like, the obviously the physical tools are there. Like, his size is solid. His speed is there. He's got home run ability. And he is very, like, he hits the holes quickly, and he does make some decisive cuts. And his cuts are dangerous. Like, some safeties are going to have a hard time tackling him.
Yeah.
But I just feel like in the Big Ten, against some of the opposition, we're going to feel like, I don't know how this translates. For me, very much like a Corey Clement. Like, basically, I know you've kind of said that. Zach Bart's kind of said that in there. I feel like that's kind of where
Bradrick Shaw is what somebody
Bradrick
said. Shaw's, I thought that one. He reminds me of him a lot.
He's a little bigger than Bradrick Shaw, isn't he? Yeah. Not though.
Yeah, yeah, he's 6'1". He's slightly bigger. Right, yeah. I there have been people that thought he would get as big as Braylon. I'm like, Braylon was already 230 at this point. Like, he's not. I think he's going to be a kid that carries about 215. I think he's got a slighter frame. I'll be shocked if he's a guy who's a really thick running back by the time he leaves here. That's part of the reason I brought up Sean Alexander, because he was a lanky back too. He was a guy who never really got kind of that really physical look to him, but he was a great back. And that doesn't minimize what he can be in college. It's just the way he's going to look. I do think there's ability for him to get quicker. I think there's an extra gear that could get pulled out of him at the top ends. I believe he had a 10.96 100 in track. He is a track guy. And you can kind of see that when he gets an open space, his gait, the way he runs, he looks like a runner.
And a lot of comments have been like tall and upright. That's obviously an issue that he has. Like, he clearly runs tall, which can track. Be coached. Right. He looks like a guy, like, I feel like my biggest concern is he runs so upright, he's going to get slammed by a safety. That ball's going to pop right out. You know?
That
like,
is a concern, just, yeah.
It's just, listen, and we haven't seen that. Look, when you watch high school film, like, you're watching tailored film. You're watching people that are put this. It's very tailored to what he did well. Mm-hmm. He is fast. He does hit the hole well. But the physical attributes are there. I'm excited we got him. Hope that he gets coached up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's what people like when we're being critical here, it doesn't mean that he's not going to be really good. It's just, we've seen people that kind of explode more on film a little bit than he does. Part of that is who he's playing against, number one, because in Wisconsin, we don't see a lot of skill kids from Wisconsin. So when you're looking at the film, it's really hard to understand what we're looking at, because there are not a bunch of 4 or 5 safeties that are running around or Division I corners that he's blowing by. You have guys that are probably running 4.7s. So he's going to be the fastest guy on the field. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be bigger than most of the guys. He's 6'1". Most of the corners and safeties are going to be guys who are probably like 5'9", you know, 160 pounds. He's going to be bigger than just about everybody.
Yeah.
So he's going to, like, it's to me that what that says, that doesn't mean he's not going to be good, but I do think that college is going to be a little bit of an eye opening to him when he sees what it's like getting on the field with that type of size, because suddenly you have defensive linemen who are 6'4", 280 pounds that you're going into the hole and that guy's standing there waiting for you. It's like, yeah, you're not just going to run him over.
Yeah. And you know, like you saw him on the film there, he hits the edge a lot. Like, he gets to the outside and he takes off. Yeah, that's fine. But against the inside linebackers who have edge to edge speed, that are like, they're going to cut that off so fast. But listen, I like the speed. I like the physical tools. I want them to develop. It's important to get the 4-star guy. Me, honestly, like, I mean, he's a composite 4-star. He's a 93 composite, like, very good ratings. And I think that's the physical tools there. And I am excited about him. I'm not trying to be a downer on him, but you know, like, obviously we like to watch him and we like to talk about this kind of stuff. So it just makes sense that, you know, that there's a couple things in there that I'm not like, oh yes.
I think we've also gotten our, like, a little bit gun shy with some of this based off of what happened with Jones and Dupree.
That was the offensive line.
Dupree's high school film is some of the craziest film I think I've seen in my life. Just watching him weave through people, and the kid played half the games half the time. some of the catches he made were just insane. And we haven't seen it translate. We'll see what happens. I do like this kid. I think that he absolutely adds to that running back room. I would love to see him find a way, because I think it would be truly special to have an in-state kid that is great at running back, like it was with Gordon, where it's like you feel even a little bit more connected to that player simply because he's an in-state kid who came up and decided to stay home and play.
Yeah. You're coughing up a storm over there, man. Look at you. There he is. All right. Let's move on to the next guy I want to talk about. So what we're going to do, Hunter Malinger, then we're going to do Reese Malinger, and then we are moving to basketball to talk about Owen Foxwell, who we also have film on Foxwell as well. But yeah, you want to add something on Kingston?
No, I was going to actually say it. I kind of – so from a comp standpoint for the Malingers, I have the same guy for both of them. So we can kind of bleed into both of
these. Okay, yeah. So let me pull my screen up here and pull up Hunter's film. All right, so it's funny. By the way, one of the things that's interesting about watching this film, if you're watching on YouTube, and a lot of these things, like I actually watched this twice. I watched the first one to look at what they're highlighting, which is Hunter Malinger. I watched it again to watch Reese Malinger on this same film because he's number 72 on the right side of the line, and number 77 is Hunter Malinger on the left side of the line. Because you kind of see, because it's funny because
they stack them on the same side.
They sometimes do, yes, but I like to watch it like this because I'm like, I want to see the film that wasn't tailored for Reese Malinger. So it's just a side note, something that, you know, when you're, if you're watching film of a guy that's like this, another guy's on the same team, it's kind of interesting to look at that. Nonetheless, Hunter Malinger, 6'6", 290 pounds, offensive lineman out of Sussex, Wisconsin. His twin brother is Reese, who we're going to cover. Man, this guy, and I saw the show you do with Ryan, where someone just used the comment, Mollingers. He's a mauler. Like this guy, the number one word to me for Hunter Malinger is versatility. He clearly can play all over the interior side of the line. I don't necessarily see him as a tackle just because there's not a lot of pass pro on this film. It's a lot of run blocking, obviously. So that lends itself to being a guard. He obviously is very strong. He's got a ton of upper body strength. He's quick out of the box. I really like his blocking technique. I think it's good. He's going to get coached up. Like he's obviously got a ton of raw size. He clearly has a good enough frame. You know, he's going to be up to 315, right? 320 probably by the time he's out there on the field. And when you take that as a guard, I think that looks really good. But what do you like about Hunter Malinger?
Yeah. So the guy I comped them to when I thought both was the first thing that popped into my head was Colin Coverley. I thought he was a grinder and just somebody that was kind of a brute. I actually thought after watching both of these guys, Reese and Hunter, they're more physical than Coverley was. They really have a great punch, and they bury people when they get on them. I think Hunter's got a little bit more versatility than what Reese does. To me, his feet are a little bit better. What I will say is, I really think that he profiles well as an interior guard.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think if you had to put him at tackle, he could probably figure out a way to make it work. I just don't think that from that standpoint, you don't see that foot movement and that lateral quickness that you'd probably like to see. And part of that might be simply because we're watching a lot of run. It's exactly. Really hard to see exactly. That where it's like, I'm not seeing him pass pro sets on the edge where I see him drop and be able to, you know, move the guy. And because of that, I question whether he'll be able to move with, and this is any of our offensive linemen that we get. When we saw Cole's film, I question how he'll hold up against speed rushers in the Big Ten because he's not seeing a lot of that yet. It's really going to be a step up for him. That doesn't mean he can't do it. And I think he moves really well, but I think he's probably more right tackle than left tackle. And with these guys, it's kind of the same way. Like, I don't see anybody that I look at and say he's super fluid and really – it's normally you see the super lanky guys. These guys are kind of filled out. Like, they're mm-hmm. probably 280. They look like they're big boys on here, and they're just barely –
he's listed at 290, and I feel like that's probably pretty accurate.
Yeah. They're absolutely crushing, and this is part of the problem with Wisconsin football. A lot of times it's you're 290 or 280 – going up against a kid on the defensive line who's like 220 and probably like 6 foot. And you're going to just, you can get by on strength on that. Now, I do think that these guys are fairly technique savvy for what they are. Like they clearly have had some coaching and have some idea of what they're trying to do, especially when you watch them trying to set up the run and understanding angles and being able to set things up to get it. Reese is actually a little better at it than I think Hunter is, at being able to turn his body into the hole and kind of just totally seal off a guy. He does a great job of that. But I think both of them are really good on the interior.
Yeah, I like what you said there. I totally agree. He's clearly been coached well. Like, you know, like they have really good technique. And Hunter, he just looks like a guy. Like he plays so violently, but he finishes every block, right? Like he goes into a block and he pancakes the guy completely. Yep. Like he finishes the play. He reads the play really well. He understands what's going on. You can just you can see that he's a very heady offensive lineman, right? Which is nice to see. And again, not a lot of pass pro on this film. Maybe we'll see some in a senior film potentially, and we'll be watching him closer now, obviously, as they go into their senior year. But there's some pass pro on there. But ultimately, I don't really think he translates to a tackle much at all. I just feel like he looks like a guy that wants to play on the interior. He plays really well with his hands. He's very good up. He's very good upper body. And I just feel like that lends itself to, I'm going to go downhill, I'm going to block, and I'm going to be a guard, versus a guy that is going to deal with all those Big Ten speed rushers, which we've seen nothing from him that shows that he can't do that, but also nothing that shows that he can do that.
I'm curious on the arm length too, because they don't look like they're super lanky. They look like fire hydrants a little bit, both of them, which isn't a bad thing. That, I mean, they look like road graders. They look like they're going to be guys who just beat the crap out of people on the interior.
Yeah. Let me pull up now Reese's film. So Reese is number 72. Again, so he's on this. He mainly plays a right tackle in this on a lot of this film, but what are some of the differences that you kind of see right off the bat between these two? I mean, obviously Hunter is slightly higher rated. He's an 89 versus Reese being an 86. What are some of those differences that you're seeing in their game?
I think that Hunter's got a little more pop and punch. Like and part of that might be, we know Reese had shoulder issues. Like how much of that affected his ability to be his physicality on the upper half, but he just buries people and he does a great job at sealing off run angles. You see him just kind of get into guys and look, the way he turns his body into it is like, it completely just sets a wall. Like there's no way to get around him. Now there's not a ton of footage on this where we see them kind of climb to the next level. A lot of times they bury whoever's at the initial time. And they're going to do a lot more combo blocking when they get to the Big Ten, because if you don't take out that linebacker, what they're just going to do is come downhill and take out the running back in the hole. And that's something that they're going to be tasked with, you know, chipping off a guy and then heading to the next level to take somebody out. But I think they both project really well as interior guys. Super physical. I think they are athletic. They move well. But I just think from a frame standpoint, they fit that really well, those positions, that interior spots really well.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if Reese even potentially could be a center. Just, I feel like that the way he looks like a guy that can kind of operate in that phone booth a little bit more. And I feel like, you know, like they're both clearly well coached. They're both clearly heady players. Their technique is very good, which means that they're smart offensive linemen, and a lot of good, smart offensive linemen who can play on the interior tend to be at the center position, right? It's because obviously it takes a lot of to being a really heady player there. But yeah, listen, I think to me, they are very, very similar. I don't see anything on film that shows me that I'm like, oh yeah, Hunter's clearly better than Reese. I'm not saying he's not. I don't see it. To me, they're both really good. They're both clearly good through a high three-star in-state offensive lineman who I'm very glad that we got. And they look like prototypical Wisconsin guards, which I'm very happy about. And because we need those, right? Like we saw that last year. We need to make sure we can get a lot more depth. And we talk a lot on this show about stacking O-line classes. Well, we're stacking another O-line class with this. I'm super impressed with what I've seen from both of them. And I think it's just, they're good gets for us, man. Like they're both guys that we need to have at Wisconsin. And I'm glad they're not going elsewhere. I'm not saying they're going to be world beaters, but I think they're going to be very solid, very smart players, which should be able, they're clearly been coached well. They're going to be coached well. They've got good technique. Their bodies get a little bit bigger. They've got both got nice frames. So Reese, by the way, also composite 3-star. So he's, so Hunter's a composite 4-star. Reese is a composite 3-star, 6'6", 285. He's listed as 5 pounds lighter than his brother. But they are, they're the Malinger twins. I think it's great that we got them. And again, just shows a little bit more focus on the in-state for Luke Fickell. But yeah, I mean, I like them. So you think Colin Cubberly, that's your, that's kind of your comp. It's fairly good. I think that's solid. But yeah,
look, be a starter probably this year. Either him or Cherry at left guard. So
yeah, for sure. So Will Hanna says one will be a tackle, one will be a guard. I don't know. Listen, I am not an O line like
we started. Really I feel like we're going down the Mandel road again.
I just
people are arguing with me that he's a tackle
for sure. Like I think you know, Kevin Haywood looked. He was a tackle.
Yes,
he looked like a tackle. He is a tackle through and through. Emerson Mandel is a guy that we were like he probably fits better at the guard. This is just ours. This is just our random opinion. We're not experts, but we watch this as fans, and I think that they both translate well to the guard position. But either way, the bigger story here is Justin that we got these three guys. The class is filling out top 10 nationally right now, which it's not going to end that way. Your what are your overall thoughts about the size of this class? Like where you think it's going to end up? How where you want to see it end up? And how high is the ceiling? On this ranking,
this is a really hard class to dig into because I don't know what the rest of this class is going to look like. I think Sorge is going to be the guy that they get at quarterback, which is another 4-star if you pull him in. But we get outside of that, I have no idea what we're grabbing at corner. I have no idea how they evaluate and look at some of these guys. Like I wouldn't be shocked. I think Steeples is a really good recruiter. I wouldn't be shocked if they pull in a 4-star. I wouldn't be also shocked if he finds somebody that he likes that's, you know, like a 88 composite that you're like, this kid's got some really nice tools. I'm fine with, I don't care. I think to me, it's going to be a class of about 22 or 23. And if that's the class size, it'll be really interesting to see what they end up with some of those other positions. Wide receiver out there, I have no clue. Right now, that board's still kind of being built by Confessor, and until we have an idea of what that's going to look like, it's really hard to know where you're going to get the extra 4-stars to see the class really jump. To be a top 25 class, you probably need 7 or 8.
I was going to say even 10
at a minimum to get to that level. If it's a lighter year, it's 7 or 8. If it's a strong year for teams where it's more top heavy, it's 10. So
yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a really good start. Aiden Mayer asked, I asked this on Locked On the other day, but would like Rajiv's thoughts. How many commits do you think we could get the first OV weekend with all our current commits going? Look, I think this staff has done incredibly well with OVs. They're going to prioritize the guys that they want to get. I feel like you could easily walk out with 5 more after the first OV weekend, which I think is fairly close to what they did. What did they do last year on their first OV weekend? Maybe 4 or 5. I'm not sure. But yeah, look, I think the way that this staff handles their OVs is spectacular. Like every year when we talk about, when we get to that weekend and we talk about official visits and we break down, we're going to obviously break down all those again. We're going to show you where they're going and all that stuff again. But I feel like our staff closes better than a lot of other staffs. And it's certainly better than Wisconsin staffs of old, right? Certainly during the Paul Chryst days. And this is what Luke Fickell does well. We can question his on-field stuff, and we're going to talk about that as the summer progresses. But the recruiting stuff, I feel like he's done, he's showed his pedigree. So I fully expect that he's going to keep these guys happy that are coming for OV weekend. And then all the guys that they're trying to close, they're going to close a lot. And I think this class also ends up around the 22-23. I think it's probably going to be in the between 25th and 30th ranked. That's kind of where I'd put this class.
I think that's right, which to me is
exactly where we need to be to continue, as I said many times, and it's like a broken record, raise this floor back up, build this foundation again with getting this like solid base of good 4-star, a lot of 4-stars, but really a ton of high 3-stars, in-state guys, guys that understand the culture, guys that want to play here. Now, the other thing is keeping this. But here's the thing about the in-state. they're much more likely to be kept than last year when we had a ton of exodus and the class ended up not being the best. This class, I'm not like worried about any of these guys leaving because they're mostly in state, which is nice to have. That's the advantage that Wisconsin has. When you get these guys, you don't often lose them, right? Where if you're pulling a guy from Texas or from, you know, Indiana or whatever, and you're like, I don't know if they're going to stay because Indiana's coming and Ohio State's coming in or whatever the case is, you've got a much better chance here. So I do like how this is shaping up. Get the in-state guys, go build out. And I think you're right about Sorgi. Obviously, that'd be a huge get for us. But I think this class ends up in the 25 to 30 range, which is a very good number for me.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. I think that's roughly where we'll be. Really, this class is going to hinge on the ceiling for this class will hinge on defensive line, wide receiver, and cornerback. If those three positions, they can pull a few four stars in, you're going to see this the ranking for this class go through the roof. But also, it isn't necessarily a negative if you're getting a bunch of guys who are high three stars. The difference between those two guys is not necessarily significant. I do think one of the things I will say, though, right now, looking at the class that we have right now, I feel like we have a ton of high floor guys. I don't know that I necessarily look at what we have brought in and say, I see a future star here. But that's also some of this, like, we haven't really filled out the edges much. You know, defensive line guys or outside linebacker types that we've seen yet that I'm like, this guy's going to be a Clayton, or, you know, there's going to be a linebacker that's going to just be all over the field and be a, kind of a nightmare. I haven't seen a corner yet that's going to be a speed guy or anything like that, or a wide receiver that we look at and go, okay, this guy's got some real upside. So while that happens, we'll see what happens here.
I think
a solid start to this class
for sure. I think Cors Loken's ceiling is actually pretty solid. I like him a lot. I think he's a guy that can be like a solid receiving threat. Not, I mean, he's got both. He can kind of play in the inside, be a blocking tight end and also on the receiving side. But I like it. I like his ceiling a lot. I like his floor too, but I think he's one of those ceiling raisers potentially. Anything else on football recruiting before we move on to basketball?
The one thing I was going to say in this, in the last question comment on there, I'll bring it up.
Yeah.
That I brought up, the staff may want to break up the current commits all coming on the first weekend to spread them out. Since number one, you don't typically, this staff has made a concerted effort to not go above 15 for a given recruiting weekend. They want to be able to give as much personal attention to recruits as possible. I don't think you want to have all your commits coming in on that first weekend, because then if you're limiting the number of uncommitted players that you're bringing in with them, I think that kind of is counterintuitive. Like, you want them to be able to recruit. You want to have guys that are already committed helping you recruit on a given weekend. And you're likely going to need guys on the next two weekends after to help kind of, you know, help you along. Right now, I think virtually all these guys are coming in on the first weekend. And I kind of look at that and I'm like, it's probably better if we have a few of you come in on the second and third and be like, hey, help sell the class. Cause we're going to probably get hopefully four or five guys in the first weekend. But that means if at where we're at right now with how many guys that we have showing up, that means you probably only have four or five guys that are coming in. You basically have to seal everybody on that.
Generally speaking, the guys that come the first weekend, we'll be able to close those deals anyway. I also think you got to keep these guys happy. These guys, if they want to come in on first weekend, you let them come on first weekend, right?
Yeah, we want to keep them that way. But I think you can also sell them and say, hey, you know, you're with us on this now. We really want to get this guy in. Is there any chance you want to come on one of the following weekends and help us kind of seal the deal on this? I think there's ways you can work with the kids.
Yeah, that's fine. But ultimately, I want to make sure that they're weekend. Yeah, I also just want to make sure they're happy too. If they want to come in there,
because
first weekends is an important weekend, it's also fine. And then you can focus on the guys that aren't committed yet. But nonetheless, all right, let's switch over to basketball. We got a guy in this week. Obviously, you know, we know there's a lot of people leaving. Hearing good things, Nolan Winter. I feel like Nolan Winter is going to stick around. Everything that I've heard is still pretty mixed bag on John Blackwell. I don't know what's going to happen with him. I made my prediction. I don't think he stays, and I don't think he's going to stay. I think he's going to end up going to a place like Michigan State. But it sounds like we're trying to keep him. So that's good. I think we are going to end up keeping Winter, which is a good thing. So that we need that. So but we did pick up. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, based off of the Foxwell move here, I personally think that may not be the worst situation if it means you go target somebody who is a little less skilled but more of an athlete to fill in to put next to Foxwell than what Blackwell is. I do think I was a little concerned if you have if your starting backcourt is Blackwell and Foxwell. You're a little athletically limited to some of the teams in the Big Ten where it's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. I think guarding would be an issue to an extent where you're not able to you don't really have anybody with high end quickness or length in that backcourt. And it's like, you're going to probably struggle athletically if you get against teams that have some quality speed or somebody who can really jump and be an athlete.
All right. Well, let's introduce the group to Owen Foxwell. Oh, by the way, great name, Owen, by the way, hint, hint on my new son. Owen Foxwell, 22-year-old, going to be a freshman. That's great. I mean, I don't know how the hell they get away with this nonsense. You're playing pro basketball in Australia.
5 years or 4 years.
And
or
then
whatever.
You're going to come play college basketball. It's so ludicrous. But whatever, do your thing. Illinois has been a successful at it. It's fine. I don't care. 22-year-old out of the NBL, which is, of course, is the Aussie Pro League and New Zealand as well. I'm going to pull up a couple. There's a couple different games here. One is a 32-point game and one is a 26-point game. This is mainly offense that we're going to watch here. Again, the defense, there are a couple clips of him having some really good full court pressure. But for the most part, you're seeing a lot of defense, a lot of offensive film out there. So we're going to show that to you. This is going to be Owen Foxwell, the Badgers' new point guard. So look, the first thing that you see is the guy's a – he's a spot-up shooter, by the way. He can shoot the ball, very good distributor of the ball. He's a true point guard. And Nick Boyd was also a true point guard, but Nick Boyd was more of a scoring point guard. This is more of a facilitator point guard who can also score the ball. He puts the ball on the deck. He likes the drive, but he's really more known for his spot-up shooting. Yes, he's also left-handed, but not as dominant on his left hand as Nick Boyd certainly was. I do think he's being brought in to be the starter. I think this is very clear. I know there's some question about that. I do think we'll get another guard out of the portal that theoretically could back up him and Blackwell, or you're going to have to go get a two. This is not our high dollar guard though. It's like, if you lose Blackwell, you're going to get a high dollar guard that either will be the play the one or the two. That's going to be a high level of scoring. This is the floor general, which I'm perfectly fine with us bringing, especially with how much we pass the ball and how adept we are getting open shots. We need a guy like this. He doesn't really pull the defense too much, but he puts the ball on the deck. He can move the ball well. You'll see a lot of passing stuff on this film as well. I like his film a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that given the competition he plays with, it's going to translate fairly well. The one thing I would say is the physicality. Like, he's a fairly small guy, and the physicality of the Big Ten is going to just be different. International ball generally is not as physical. They call games a little bit tighter on the international stage. So I think that element of it is going to be something that's going to be a bit of an adjustment for him. Hopefully he puts on a little weight. He gets coached up. But what are your thoughts on Owen Foxwell?
Yeah, number one, the first thing that I see with him is he's really crafty and really adept at changing speeds. I've heard a lot of people say that they don't think that he's going to be able to get in the paint. I don't think he's going to have much of a problem at all getting into the paint. The issue with him is I don't think he can pressure the rim. Like, he's not a guy that is going to finish remotely like Boyd did.
No way.
So, but what that will mean is that he's going to be probably really adept at drive and kick, which is fine. I think I could see him for the first time, us having somebody who is going to really kind of show up on the assist numbers for us. Because I do think that he's going to be able to play the pick and roll game a lot here. They do some similar things to Wisconsin in terms of offensive philosophy on his current team. I've heard a couple of people you asked me for a comp. I said that I thought Bronson Keating. I think there are some differences there between the two of them. Keating was a little bit bigger, more physical, but I think they're just both really crafty, heady players, and they both shoot the ball well. I personally think that he could have a Boyd level impact in a different way. I think he might be a better defender because I think he'll be more engaged and the effort is there. I do not think that he's going to be a guy that you can expect to go and get you 20 on a given night, but I think he's a guy that can probably go get you 12 or 13 on a given night and hopefully, you know, get you 5 or 6 assists.
Well, you know, I think he can still have those big games because he can go nuclear from three. The guy
you can't count on really well. Yeah,
it's agreed.
It's not something you can look at like with Boyd, who was consistently getting 20 a game, and you're like, yeah, we can pencil him in. He'll have games where he probably goes for 22, 24, or whatever, but it's going to be more of a him going off than a consistent type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, overall, Justin, I'm very happy with this. I think you had to get a guard that could replace Nick Boyd, that could actually handle the ball. We don't know if we're keeping John Blackwell. I don't expect that to happen. I do think we'll spend John Blackwell money on a portal ad to replace his scoring, mm-hmm. in addition to what Winter is going to hopefully bring us next year. But I think this is a perfect guy to have out there because you just have to have a guy that can pass the ball really well. How many times earlier in the season did we say, boy, if Nick Boyd could just pass the ball a little bit better, a little cleaner, a little crisper, a little faster, have that vision. But listen, we needed Nick Boyd. He was our best player. He was our good scorer. But I think the passing ability for this guy is what I really like. And you've got a passing point guard who can also spot up three. That's a really good combination. It makes you a really difficult weapon to guard. And again, not a lot of film on his defense, but from everything that I've read and I've seen some other things and see some clips here and there, he does have he is a good defender. It looks like he's going to be a good, decent on ball defender. He's not very physical. He's going to get manhandled by some of these guards in the conference.
Oh, for sure.
Really good at, really, really good at overall.
The one thing that's a saving grace for him is he is very crafty. Like he's one of those, if you get physical, I think he's the type of guy who's a smart enough player to sell it and be able to kind of get you into foul trouble because he knows how to kind of make you overplay your hand defensively a little bit. He's played against grown men, so he's used to some level of physicality. The level of quickness, I'm concerned with him against guards who can really press into him on the defense and are capable of staying with him so they can really extend out. That's where I kind of get a little concerned with him, is what's going to happen. I think people are getting a little too overblown on the athleticism to an extent. He's not going to be Nick Boyd. If you're looking for him to be a guy who works that way, he's more like, somebody said that he reminds them of Steve Nash. Now, obviously he's not Steve Nash, but in terms of the way he plays the game, I think that's kind of what you're looking at. A guy who's not necessarily going to do much in the lane other than distribute, and a guy who's more of a shooter and a facilitator overall. But there's some scoring there. And I think much like there was with Nash wasn't the guy that scored a lot at the rim. He was a guy who had a decent mid-range game and a guy who really could shoot from three. And that's kind of what you're looking for from this guy. He's going to have floaters and stuff like that he can do, but he's not going to be a guy that's going to attack the rim. Braden Smith, I think Smith was a little bit bigger and more physical.
Braden Smith is an incredible point guard who manipulates the defense, right? So like when Braden Smith moves, the defense moves with him and he creates openings for his teammates. That I don't see that from Foxwell. I'm not saying he's not going to be good, but Braden Smith is elite at point guard play. He's going to be in the NBA and he's going to be a damn good NBA
player. He's set the record for assists in college basketball.
That's right. Like he is very, very skilled. But yeah, no, not Braden Smith. But anyway, I like him. And I hear that Thomas Miller had the comment about athleticism. I hear you have on the athleticism. I don't really care because we're going to need other guys. If we don't go out and get an athletic wing, I'll be furious. We need more athletes on this team. Yeah. And I think we'll get an athletic wing that can defend on the wing. But they can also add some athleticism, that like Khalil Iverson type. But you do need the passing point guard, especially with an offense that is this, that flows like our offense does. There were times last year we got really good shots, but how many times did we say if Nick Boyd would have driven and passed it quickly out, we would have had even more open shots? Yeah. He could have been better at passing, and that's what this guy brings. He's not going to have the scoring. We're not done yet. Obviously, this isn't even a portal ad. This is just a recruit. He's going to be a freshman. But I think that if you couple that now with what Greg Gard has proven he can do in the portal, I'm confident in like what this guy brings. And listen, he might go get another point guard to start. I do think this guy's going to start because as a freshman, he has tons of experience. He's a freshman, but he's not really a freshman. Justin, I asked you this before the show. I'm curious, like if he's not fully rated on the systems yet, but it, when he does get rated, if he was rated, where would you put him as far as stars? And like, give me like a out of 100, like kind of your 247 level that you'd put him.
I would probably have like a 90, 91. I think that he's going to come in day one, probably be a guy who's going to average double digit points, probably 4 or 5 assists at a minimum. And I think he's going to shoot. He's going to have good shooting metrics. He's probably going to go out there and get you 80%+ from the free throw line. He's probably going to shoot mid to upper 30s from three. And I think that he's going to be smart with the ball. Like the thing I like about him when you watch him offensively, there's very few stupid shots that you look at and you're like, what were you thinking? He does a lot within the flow of the offense. He takes his shots when he gets a step on a guy. He does what he takes what's there. When it's not, he just moves the ball and facilitates. He's definitely a pass first guy. In some ways, like I like his game better than a lot of point guards we've had at Wisconsin, because I think that you look at it and you're like, he truly understands what it means to control things offensively. And I think that you could see him being a really good quality leader out on the court. Like, we haven't had a floor general in a while. I think Bronson was the last guy that I looked at where I was really like, he's controlling this team. He's running the show.
I think Chucky was a floor general.
To an extent, but there was less with him where I felt like he was the one, because our offense didn't really allow him to like be a huge assist or penetrate and kick guy when he was here. Bronson was more so, we were more iso ball. So there was a little bit more, and not that his assist numbers were huge for Bronson, but like just some of the things that he did from a heady point guard style, like, I don't know, Chucky, for whatever reason, I never totally fell in love with his game as a facilitator.
I believe that a facilitator is what a team, all team, all, in my opinion, any basketball team that I like needs a good facilitator. And I like that. I'm glad we got that. We'll see what Greg Gard does. He's proven it again. I think he will continue to add. Obviously the portal is not even available yet. When the portal's fully open, man, I think Gard's going to do his thing. We'll see how much money is there. That's a big question mark on how much money is actually available to Greg Gard, but we'll just have to see. I would put him more of an 89, by the way. Like, he's a high 3-star, not really a 4-star for me, but that's, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Like, who knows what he has and what he's going to be, but I think I'm really, really happy with the ad. And now you can go spend some serious cash on the other guys to fill out the team. We'll close the show there. Justin, anything else you want to bring up before we close today?
I think that's about it. Football's going to be kicking back off again this week. I'm more than ready to start hearing some news again. Really looking forward to hopefully hearing about some continued growth from Colton Joseph. I think that we're all just, we want to see how this starts to play out. We want to hear that things are headed in the right direction. And that's what we're all kind of waiting on and getting kind of, you know, at least for me, I'm getting a little antsy here, you know, wanting to hear some positive news. Because right now we're all kind of wanting to know that things are going to be headed where we think they need to be for us to have a quality season.
As you've said, this is the best roster that we've probably seen that Fickell's probably had. I think that looks to be pretty clear at this point, especially with those linebackers and some of the steps that the defense took last year. I'm pretty confident in what we're seeing. I think my final thought's going to be good luck to the friggin' hockey team, man. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, we talk a lot about football and basketball on the show, and that's what we've always said we're going to do, the cover. That's what Justin and I are big fans of, and we will cover hockey. And we're going to, I want to commit to doing more of that,
I'll give a parting thought on that for sure. I think when it comes to hockey, make no mistake, people, Wisconsin is not necessarily expected to win either of these games. They are absolutely good enough to beat either one of these teams. Mm-hmm. And they've proven it. They've beaten Michigan already. And when they are on, they are a very, very tough team to beat.
And unlike our basketball team, they know how to win in March. So that's exciting. Because, we'll throw those shots. Those shots are deserved after that high point loss. Good luck to the hockey team. If they win on Thursday, I will be there. And look for me on TV on Saturday, because I'm going to get as close to the ice as I can. And I'll be wearing this jersey, and it's going to be awesome. I would love to see the Badgers win a national title here in my hometown, which would be great. But thanks for joining us. And as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.